This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Welcome back to Dana and Parks. Glad to have you on board. Excited to welcome in KMBC 9 investigative reporter Matt Fleener into our studio in the 5 o'clock hour to talk about a story coming up involving deaths and injuries of inmates in custody. I say inmate loosely because I think some of these folks were people maybe charged but not convicted of a crime.
Okay.
And he's going to come into studio in the 5 o'clock hour and talk to us about that. A quick update on the towing debacle with Metro Tow. We're not going to make this a topic, just passing it on. Mayor Quentin Lucas this week says the city is working on new legislation aimed at putting some teeth behind the existing regulations with respect to predatory towing. They have received hundreds of emails and calls from people who believed their cars were essentially stolen.
And victims.
You know, multiple victims have come back with Metro Tow, the one that is dominating the headlines. But I think there are others out there. They are still asking if you were affected that you email predatorytowing@kcpd.org. Keep in mind, this problem is so bad, they have set up an email for you to directly contact the police department at predatorytowing@kcpd.org.
And Metro Tow is the company that has made all of the headlines regarding the allegations. But we also have to keep in mind that the two KCTV5 reporters that were trapped outside of their facility by multiple tow trucks, all three of those trucks did not say Metro Tow. They had a different company name that, if you look into the company, appears to be listed as the same address Metro Tow.
They came back as the same address.
Ah, so we have multiple businesses, possibly?
Different company name plastered all over those trucks. But if you look at it, if you look up the company.
So if you're thinking like, look, I think this happened to us, but it wasn't Metro Tow, it might have very well been. It could have been one of the other umbrella companies or maybe
registered
someone.
Several different names of businesses at the same address.
So email police. They want to hear from you. All right. I've been sitting on this for a couple of days, and Dan, I want you to weigh in on this as well. Most Americans, in a new survey, believe their job is meaningful to society. According to a new survey, 62% of adult workers with full or part-time jobs say they are meaningful. Not essential, meaningful. Only 20% reported their jobs are not making any meaningful contribution to the world. Office space. Women by 2 percentage points are more likely to say their jobs are making more of a contribution to the world. Full-time workers are more likely than part-time workers.
Oh, that just makes sense, yeah.
The survey found that people with more education are more likely to say they have a meaningful contribution, though all educational attainments rank above 50%. You might have only graduated high school, or maybe you have your GED. I can think of a string of incredibly meaningful professions without which our society would collapse that you don't necessarily have to have some post-secondary degree to accomplish.
Well, think all
of the city services.
It's all about perspective, really, because all jobs in theory are meaningful, but how meaningful do you need them to be? Is putting a smile on your face, standing behind a register at a restaurant, you know, you could find thousands of people that would say that job is not meaningful. That person is easily disposable.
I disagree.
I completely disagree, because if you put a smile on your face and you give that person a good experience, they could be having the worst day in the world, and you could turn that day upside down and make it a brighter day simply with that 2-minute interaction that you have at that register.
Meaningful to you or meaningful to society?
To society.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I'm actually surprised it's not a little bit higher. And it was actually men and those under 40 that were most likely to report they had a, quote, email-focused type job that was not meaningful.
White collar, yeah.
It really is sad to me that 38% think that their job isn't meaningful, and those people need a change of mindset.
Okay, so
or a change of job.
One of the greatest reporters of our lifetime, and I'm going to say I mean that, our lifetime, posted a story about this last week. His name is Steve Hartman. He was with CBS. I'm not sure where he landed, Dan, or where he ended up. He's a feature reporter.
Mm-hmm.
You might remember him as the reporter that would throw a dart, and wherever that dart landed, he would go to that town and find a story to tell. Okay? So he just reposted this story last week, and I put it on social, but Dan, I'm going to urge you to do it too, because it gave me chills. It made me cry. It's like a lot of his stories are all the feels, and it involves a woman who is in New York, and she started having some health issues and had to pay some medical bills. The person on the other end of the billing department, world away. Have you seen this story?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I might have Sam look this up, see if we can play some of it.
I couldn't help but be a little bit snarky and cynical.
No,
when I was
don't you
this.
Pee on my good story. A woman a half a world away, you guys, is in a medical billing department. And let me just tell you, we all know that health insurance companies are not like really on everybody's top of your happy list right now, right? So this woman who works in billing noticed when she sent the bill to this woman in New York, the woman's name was Melody. So the woman in billing, turns out she's an artist. She started putting little musical notes on the envelope to Melody. And Melody would get the bill and saw the handwritten musical notes. And she thought, well, that's kind of cool. And then the next month, another bill would come. And as the monthly bills would come in, the art became more and more incredible and detailed. Like, think hang it in the Louvre. This woman is an artist, capital A. And if you asked her, is your job meaningful as someone in a billing department for healthcare? I don't know what percentage of them would say it's meaningful. Let's play some of it, Sam. It's going to make you cry.
But as the months progressed, the envelopes got more and more elaborate. And this was original art, created anonymously just for her.
It's hard to even describe. It was incredible.
Melody did call her provider, MJHS Health System,
and asked if by chance there was anyone in the billing department who was artistic. She says the phone got quiet, and then she heard, "Hey, Emily, it's for you."
I'm like, uh-oh, what I do now?
What were you hoping was going to come from this?
I like to make people happy.
Accounting clerk Emily Margolis is hardly a frontline caregiver, but she says she can still make people better, and her drawings are her way. Melody was so grateful, Emily decided to ramp up her game even further. She began taking Melody's mailings home at night and spent hours turning those plain white business envelopes into masterpieces.
Then I started adding rhinestones. I know, I got involved with the gold leaf. That was fun. I had never done that before. Yeah.
Where was this going to stop?
I know how much she had left to pay.
It's been a couple years since we first told this story. Melody is all paid up.
Hello.
The two are now good friends. And Emily has started getting mail of her own from school kids, grateful for the example she has set. There was also an exhibit at a Manhattan coffee shop showcasing Emily's enveloping creations and highlighting the healing power of her kindness.
So look, that thing brought a tear to my eye. It ends up in an art gallery. They did like an entire installation with her envelopes in this art gallery. It is the coolest thing ever. I do not
know. It's very cool.
Why are you saying you poo-pooed my good story?
Well, it was just it's not the story. It's not the artiste. It's just, well, I mean, of course she has so many medical bills because she does health here in this country. And so there's plenty of
customers. Dan!
Get out!
Wine bomb, get out! No, I think it is just a lovely story. They became friends. There's this moment where they're hugging, and then school children start sending her their art.
It is sweet.
Dan,
it's very sweet.
This job has stained you. It has stained the glory of kindness
in
your brain.
It's too bad there were so many envelopes to send.
There were. It didn't get into why she was ill or why she had bills. They probably put her on a payment plan, Dan. It might have been, a rotten tooth or something. It could have been something very simple.
It was a foot injury. They talked about it in the beginning of the story.
Okay, so if you are in billing and you asked that woman, is your job meaningful? Or you asked society, is someone in healthcare billing, is that a meaningful job? I think 90% of the people will go, well, no, you're pushing bills to people who are sick that can't afford to pay them. That is an example that she literally changed that woman's life.
As long as we're peeing on good stories, Dan, why did she pick this random person?
Because her name was Melody. And so she started with a couple of little music notes.
Melody never reached back out and said, I love your letters.
Like Melody.
Right.
Well, as they became more involved, that's when Melody called and said, do you have an artist, legitimately an artist? Because when you look at these envelopes, you have to see them to believe them.
Because she's going, what's going on? Why am I getting this every month? Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, Dan, was she going to be fired for doodling on the job?
Well, I'm sure
no.
somebody in the bean counting department was wait a minute. Wait a minute, what are you doing?
Wasting some serious time and resources here, lady.
Yeah, the healthcare bean counting department. I am going to force you to post that update on the KMBZ Facebook.
All right.
It on my Dana Wright KMBZ page.
Yeah.
And people have shared it and reshared it.
It's a sweet story. Yeah.
If you're
it's
ever
a very sweet story.
Feeling like you need good news in the world, just look up Steve Hartman, because every single one of those stories, he is so creative. He is an incredible writer, a gift of a reporter.
Yeah,
and
he is.
Most of the stories will just bring a smile to your face and maybe sometimes a tear to your eye.
But don't share it with Dan.
Don't share it with Dan.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, do they know what she's doing down there in billing? 1-3-5-8-6-7-7-9-8. Welcome on back to Dana and Parks. Glad to have you on board on this sort of gray Wednesday afternoon. And I asked Chief Meteorologist Brian Busby over at Channel 9, do we need to have you on? What's going on outside? He says nothing to worry about with respect to anything scary, like tornadic things, just maybe some rain. And if that changes, he will let us know. And at that point, we would have him on the program.
Just a good old Kansas City spring storm.
Yep. Occasional storms with some wind puffs and hail, but no naders.
No naders.
He says the next better chance for stronger storms isn't until Monday.
I was about to go wash my truck this morning, and I pulled up the weather and thought to myself,
I'll let
nature do it.
Don't do it yet.
It should be starting here soon. I'm kind of surprised that it's still not blue skies. It's cloudy, but
it kind of looks green outside, like it does before storms.
Well, let's not say that, because green means tornadoes.
I know. I
Are you sure it's not the tinting on the windows?
It might be the tinting on the windows. I like a good spring storm.
I do too.
I'm not. I have a healthy appreciation for what Mother Nature can do, but I love me a good spring storm.
I love the smell of rain too.
So we're going to get into this a little bit in this next segment. If you have not watched the latest documentary on the Scott Peterson case, it is a run, do not walk, because there are some bombshell revelations in that documentary about what the public was told about that case, what was withheld in that case.
Oh, evidence that was denied from trial many, many times.
And there are very few times where I have said, especially when it comes to crime in courts, where I have said, I think we may have gotten this one wrong. I mean, I think I can count on a couple of fingers the number of times I've said, I think we got this one wrong.
Yeah.
If you watch that documentary and then read some of the updated court filings for the Innocence Project that is fighting to either have him exonerated or at the very least a new trial.
The LA Innocence Project
has
taken up the case.
You will not believe some of the evidence that was left out or withheld from the public and the jury in that trial.
And so, it's not just hearsay. Some of this evidence is video footage from reporters that were outside of that home following the tragedy that happened.
What this case will do, and it's uncomfortable for us to do this, as a society, it's uncomfortable for us to do this. It will make you take a look at someone, Scott Peterson, that was a loathed, despised defendant. You know, this was a young woman, Lacey, taken in the prime of her life toward the end of a very healthy pregnancy.
Yeah.
Both Lacey and that unborn child, Connor, you remember, were murdered. It will make you take a very uncomfortable look at how we villainize someone, why we villainize them with the information that we have. Because one of the things I've said to Sam about this case is that he is not a likable human being.
Oh, certainly not, especially with the allegations of the affair on his wife who
and he has admitted
was pregnant.
That.
Yeah.
He is not likable. He reeked of guilt. He reeked of guilt. However we want to frame that conversation, what does guilt look like to you? He reeked of it. And then today there is another update in the case. And I will have you ask, did we get this one wrong? And of all the cases that you would have thought, boy, we got that one wrong. This wasn't even in the top list of like 1,000 cases where you're like, yeah, I'm not even really sure that he did. Everyone just universally thought he did this. He went away for the rest of his life. Good. Good riddance.
Now, we do have to keep in mind, full transparency, the documentary that we are referencing that has all of this bombshell evidence was produced by the Peterson family. So it's very obviously trying to paint him in an innocent light. However, many of the things that they bring up are true.
And are in the court filings today.
Are in official court record. They were in official court record then. They were just denied from the trial.
So this is the update today, and then we might take some calls on this because, I don't know, it makes me very uncomfortable. And I think it's because we don't like it when we get something wrong. And if we did get this wrong, we got it so wrong.
By the way, the docuseries we're talking about is The Murder of Lacey Peterson on Hulu.
Los Angeles Innocence Project claims there is explosive new evidence in the Scott Peterson case. And if you watch the documentary, this evidence comes to light. The LA Innocence Project has filed a petition with the California Court of Appeals to get a new trial for Scott Peterson in the 2002 murder of his wife, Lacey, and their unborn son. Lawyers claim the jury did not hear evidence 2 decades ago, including witness statements and evidence about a home burglary directly across the street. Prosecutors had said in the past the burglary had nothing to do with the case, and Sam, I don't think I believe that anymore. I think the burglary had everything to do with this case for a variety of reasons we'll get into when we return. But they have filed a petition with the appeals court for a new trial. I think he will get it because the new evidence in the case it's damning. It is damning to the prosecution's case. It includes statements from witnesses who saw Lacey Peterson alive at the time the prosecutors say she was already dead. And the reason these witnesses are believable is because they are neighbors who knew her and loved her. And you could not miss a 9 months pregnant woman out walking with her dog. She was a very identifiable neighbor.
Now, we have to kind of lay out the details of the story. Most people know it. Some people don't. They are claiming that she was murdered by her husband, Scott Peterson, prior to walking the dog on December 24th, Christmas Eve, before he went out and went on a fishing trip where they claim that he dumped the body.
Witnesses are now saying, and they said at the time, and I believe it was withheld at trial, that neighbors saw her that day confronting burglars breaking into her neighbor's house across the street.
Those witness accounts were not allowed in trial.
If true, and I believe that it is, I believe the neighbors, they would have no reason to come forward and defend Scott Peters. No reason at all. If true, and if they allow that during a new trial, he would not have been convicted then, and I do not think he would be convicted today. We're up against a break. We'll get into it here when we get back. 913-586-7798. You're listening to Dana and Parks. So a couple things I want to remind everybody, as we're hearing about this new filing in this old case that just made headlines around the world at the time. There was never a shred of physical evidence tying him to the murder of his wife. Not a hair, not a fiber, not a drop of blood in the house, nothing in the boat. There was nothing tying him to the murder of his wife, except that he was a DB who was having an affair with a woman in recorded conversations saying things like, I'm not married.
She's dead.
Or my wife has died.
Yeah.
Awful
the
behavior.
The wife is dead is the real only tie.
Yes.
To the idea that he could have done it because they didn't have a body for weeks.
That he had said to his mistress before she was dead that I have a wife, but she died. He said,
right.
He said to his mistress, I'm a widow. I'm a widow. It doesn't mean he killed her. And when you start looking at this most recent filing, I think they are going to flip this one, Sam. And I will remind everyone, this was a death penalty case at the time.
From the text line, I'm a 25-year cop. You have to stop watching documentaries by a particular producer. No question he killed her, 100%. Everyone knows it. The burglary happened on a different day, and even if it didn't, burglars don't take bodies to the bay and dump them. They steal and leave. No question, police got it 100% right.
Okay, let's talk about
in.
The burglary,
Call
Sam.
In.
All right, so jurors in this case were told the burglary across the street was on December 26th.
The day after Christmas.
The day after, you know, she would have been already dead. Burglary happened after she was dead.
I believe it happened about 8 a.m.
The jurors were told it was December 26th. That was testimony told to the jurors. I'm not saying they lied. I don't know how you get this fact screwed up. The burglary was on the 24th of December when she was very much alive.
Now, we don't know that it was on the 24th other than the witness account.
They have a police report, Sam.
What we do know is that it wasn't on the 26th. And how do we know that? Well, if you watch the documentary, they speak to the reporter who I believe was working for KTLA at the time, who was sent to cover the murder the day after Christmas.
To cover the disappearance.
Excuse me, you're right. The disappearance the day after after Christmas. He goes, he sets up his camera, he runs live hits all day long from in front of that house with the home
Correct.
Where the burglary allegedly happened.
In the background.
In camera shot. During his live hits, at no point does that camera pick up a van and a burglary on the morning
of
December 26th.
If you're going to burglarize someone, you're not going to do it when there's five news vans out front because a pregnant woman has disappeared.
And he was there for hours.
Further, the van in question across the street that was tied to that burglary was later found burned out. To the police officer who says he killed her. I'm not saying he killed her. I'm not saying he didn't. I'm saying if the correct evidence was placed in front of that jury, there is no way you could convict that man. Was he a horrible husband? Absolutely. He was rotten to the core with respect to his relationship and what was going on with another woman at the time. But man, you got to have more than that to send a man to death row. This was a death penalty case, and we have to be better. We have rules in place for a reason, and the petition cites that evidence of the burglary, the date of the burglary, the burned out van, that if jurors had just seen that evidence, they would not have convicted. And I'm telling you, I believe it.
Not to mention that, if I remember correctly, there were, like, I don't know, 10 or 15 attempts with that specific style of boat, because they allege that he dumped her body in the bay with concrete weights tied to it.
Yep.
And they went out, the investigators, on that exact style of boat.
With the exact weight of what that body would have weighed.
A sandbag that would have weighed exactly what her body would have weighed, with anchors tied to it. And every single time...
the boat flipped.
The boat either flipped, capsized, or the person who was running the investigation fell in with the body.
Also not presented to jurors.
Correct.
I'm telling you, Sam, something about this case stinks. And I don't know why. I am the least likely person to come to that man's defense. But something about the way this was presented to the public and to the jurors stinks. It just does. Let's go to Brian in Olathe. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Dana. So I just want to see your guys' opinion on this. I was paying attention to this when it was going on, and I understand the weights, but if I recall, and this is where I kind of want to be fact checked on, is they found these weights, like you said, the concrete, like they were in his garage where the boat was stored, and that's where they did find hair on one of the weights, if I'm not mistaken. And that was a big piece of evidence.
I'll have to go back and look, Brian, but answer me this. If she was, this was a brutal murder. You mean to tell me with the entire weight of the LAPD, they could not find a single drop of blood? Here's the other deal, Brian. They can't tell you where she died. They can't tell you how she died. They can't tell you when she died.
And Brian,
how is that a death penalty case? They can't tell you anything about her death at all. And with the burglary evidence withheld, they also have a witness, Brian. Do you remember? They have a witness who saw her struggling. It looked like she was, not to be blue here, it looked like they said she was squatting down trying to urinate and someone pushed her into that van. And the reason they remember so clearly, because the woman said to the husband, oh my God, did they just push that pregnant woman into a van?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not on either side yet. I would obviously want to see more information. I just recall that when I was like following it big time, that there was hair found and he had like multiple weights that would have been able to drag her down in his garage where that boat was stored.
And Brian,
how did he get her in the water without flipping the boat?
They did find weights, concrete weights, which would not be atypical for a boat owner to have as an anchor. If you don't want to go out and pay for an anchor, you make a concrete weight. The hairs were not found on the weight. The hairs were found on a pair of pliers that happened to be on the fishing boat. The defense argued hair gets everywhere all the time.
With a married couple, you have to have more than a hair.
It wasn't bloody hair. It was just hair.
You have to have more than a hair to send someone to death row. And what does it say to you that the Innocence Project took this up? He is not a sympathetic character. He is not the champion that everyone wants to see released. He's just not. And to me, they have so many cases and people beating down their door saying, I didn't do it. They only choose the ones they think that there's a shot. They think that there is actual innocence. Just the fact that the Innocence Project took up this case has got to make you wonder. 913-586-7798. We're back with much more straight ahead. Welcome on back to Dana and Parks. We are super excited to have KNBC's investigative reporter Matt Fleener in with us for the 5 o'clock hour. It's a nationwide investigation that is changing policy here and beyond when it comes to the rules when someone is restrained, in many cases, before they have been convicted of a crime. And we're going to talk about that straight ahead. I do want to update you guys on the story that we were talking about out of Lawrence. I got a little bit more information on this. If you don't follow the Lawrence Police Department on social, make it a habit to do so. They are really, really good. They are informative. They are oftentimes very funny. And every once in a while, you get a post like this that involves Kansas City.
Sometimes too funny, and they get in trouble.
I think it's funny. The kids love it, Sam. If you have had your car or your home broken into in the last few weeks, the Lawrence PD writes, we may have your stuff. So officers arrested a man at the Motel 6th on North 3rd yesterday. When they arrested him, they found at least $10,000 worth of stolen stuff. And this is a lot of smaller stuff, but big ticket items. So computers, tablets, specialty electronics, tools. They also got a stolen car and some illegal drugs, but we're—
Sounds like some easily identifiable stuff.
Very easy. And so what Lawrence PD is doing today is they are sifting through all of it. It says it's going to take time. We have dozens. I mean, Sam, I don't know if you've looked at the video and the photos here. They have car keys galore, some of them with identifying keychains on them. They have more than 30 IDs. Not sure why someone left their ID in their car, but if they did, it was stolen. Lawrence might have your ID. So they're going to work backward from the driver's licenses and try to find the victims first that way is my guess. They say we will call you if they already know about a case that you're connected to. But the reason they're asking you to look at the video, and we'll post this on social, is because the victims are from Kansas City, Lawrence, and Topeka. And I asked them, where did this guy live specifically in Kansas City? Because he was arrested at the Motel 6 in Lawrence.
Right.
But they're saying he's from Kansas City. I don't have an exact address, but they replied in the last 20 minutes or so that several of his prior addresses are in the Northland. So take that for what it's worth.
So in theory, a lot of these burglaries could have happened.
But again, we don't know. They found him at the Motel 6. But it's worth going online and looking at the cache of stuff. Just the car keys alone. You would be able to recognize some of these keys if they belonged to you. I will tell you that. You know how some kids have, like, they have quirky fobs or, you know.
Maybe a special keychain.
Like one of them is a Chiefs bottle opener.
They have some, those fancy bedazzled, like, hook things.
Yep. There are also keys that I will tell you look like they belong to an office desk drawer. Like all of the little keys that we're given when we have the ability to lock your, you know, your center little silly drawer at work. A lot of those types of keys. So if you go to Lawrence Department Facebook page, I think they put it out on Twitter. We will put it on our social media as well. They are trying to reunite these folks with all of their missing stuff. Good work by Lawrence PD, because it's a mess right now with all the stuff that they have. A quick update to the lotto story. Remember the woman who won the really, really, really big lottery? And then the state of Texas said, we're not going to pay you because we don't like the way you bought your ticket.
I believe it was $82.5 million.
Yep.
She won the big jackpot, and she had used a third-party ticket courier service.
Yep.
Well, as it turns out, according to the story that we got today, that's not the only issue going on at the Texas lottery.
Nope. Two of the biggest jackpots in agency history have prompted flares of scrutiny and criticism from media, lawmakers, and state officials who are now questioning whether some of the lottos were fairly won, whether courier companies should be allowed, and now they are investigating whether or not this woman should be paid. It was an $83 million ticket. In the shadow of all of that news, the executive director of the lottery commission there has resigned without comment. There's no comment from the lotto commission, just he is no longer working here.
Somebody saw the bulldozer headed his way and decided to get out of the way of it.
I don't know. Something is fishy about that, and I think they should pay that woman her $83 million. 913-586-7798. We sit in with Matt Fleener here in just a moment to talk about a big investigation coming up on KMBC. And we will be back with much more on Dana and Parks straight ahead. Stick with us.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.